Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Kathy Gorski. I am this morning's board rep. I have a variety of announcements about church life and activities, so I'll get on with those. Also, I encourage you to read the announcements listed in the order of service, and feel free to take the order of service home with you as a reminder. The additional announcements are, first of all, don't forget about the coffee house Friday night at 7 p.m. We have music from Armonia, Greg Bowdy, and others. It is a fundraiser for the high school trip to Appalachia. Also, the high schoolers will have a 10-minute planning meeting after the service. Another reminder about Mary Pope downsizing and the fact that she has offered many of her beautiful art pieces to the church for a silent auction. The art's on display in the social hall. The auction will run this Sunday and through the end of next Sunday, the 17th. Thank you very much, Mary, for the generous donation. Also, starting today, please bring in canned goods all month long, including cans of pet food. The Easter Bunny will hide these cans for our children to hunt for on Easter Sunday, and they will then be donated to a local food pantry as well as given to the Humane Society in Waukesha. Please place your canned good donations in the basket in the foyer. Thank you very much. I have two people or groups of people who would like to make announcements. First, Al has a very brief announcement about an event taking place here on May 7th, and then the middle schoolers have an announcement.
Beer. For the social good. In the 1920s, if you worked for Guinness, enjoyed free medical and dental care, massage services, reading rooms, subsidized meals, a company-funded pension, subsidies for funeral expenses, educational benefits, sports facilities, free concerts, lectures, and entertainment, and a guarantee of 2 pints of Guinness per day, is brewing your spiritual connection with the divine. Our seventh principle, you know, LCUUC brewers see the interdependent web of life in action with that feeding frenzy of fermentation when yeast is added to the wort of grains and water and hops. Let's learn more. May 7th, right here, 6 p.m. Don't have to have brewed beer to come. Lastly, Wicked Cool High School fundraiser for their Appalachia trip. See the high school kids in the lobby. Thanks.
Do you like cookies? Yeah.
Do you like jewelry? Yeah.
And do you hate your children and want to get rid of them for a day?
Everybody wants to eventually. Well, why don't you guys come to our middle schoolers by the way sale with the selling baked goods, jewelry, and
talents. Like babysitting and a sports clinic.
All the proceeds will go to HAWS and Red Cross to support the tsunami relief in Japan. So come, get rid of your children. Buy some pretty jewelry and eat.
Thank you all. I invite you to greet those sitting around you at this point. Today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitors table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on that table about church life and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church. Oh, and I just remembered an announcement I was going to make, and that is that there is one more listening session after the service at 11:30 about the search for the new minister. It'll be, I'm not sure which room, but we'll announce it after the service. Let's backtrack. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to speak with you about that as well. If you are visiting us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the entryway if there is a need for childcare during the service. Classes will end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. We would really enjoy meeting you.
Hi, I'm Eric, and I brought my parents with me today. They're here visiting from Minnesota.
Welcome. Okay, everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service a real call to action. Today is just a Sunday, and the topic of our service is the plight of women and girls in various cultures and situations, and how we can help improve their lives and the lives of their families. All of us contributing to the service, as well as a few others, have read and discussed as a group the book Half the Sky, which is sitting here on the chancel table. And today's service is an offshoot of those discussions. The book is also available in the library for anyone who would like to read it, the church library. Terry Fritz organized our book discussions and will now provide an overview of today's service.
The authors of Half the Sky shed light on the greatest human rights violations affecting our world today. The one common thread with everyone who reads the book is they are shocked by the sheer magnitude of these issues and the fact that we hear so little about them. We're going to talk about the three categories of problems today. The first is sex trafficking and forced prostitution, including sexual slavery. The second, gender-based violence, which includes honor killings, rapes, and rape used as warfare. The third is maternal mortality. It happens that these issues primarily affect women and girls. However, as the authors clearly warn us, if the international effort to effect change against these global human rights violations is dubbed a woman's issue, then it will already have failed. Women's issues are marginalized. These are no more women's issues than the Holocaust was a Jewish issue or the transatlantic slave trade was a black issue. Humanitarian concerns transcend any one race, gender, or creed. The Pulitzer Prize-winning authors of Half the Sky, husband and wife Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn, clearly lay out the atrocities against girls and women. However, they do provide us pragmatic, inspirational, grassroots guide to making a difference. They show us that the plight of girls is no more a tragedy than an opportunity. And I'm so thrilled that we have the opportunity to shed light on some of these problems this morning. I'm going to begin with opening words from Reverend Gary Kowalski. We gather here to worship, to seek the truth, to grow in love, to join in service, to celebrate life's beauty and find healing for its pain, to honor our kinship with each other, to create a more compassionate world beginning with ourselves, to wonder at the mystery that gave us birth, to find courage for the journey's end, and listen for the wisdom that guides us in the quiet of this moment. chalice lighting words are from the Reverend Gordon B. McKeon, quoting from Genesis. Let there be light. Let it shine in dark places, in moments of pain, in times of grief, in the darkness of hatred, violence, oppression, where there is discouragement and despair, wherever darkness is to be put to flight, let there be light. Please join now with the choir and sing the chalice lighting response, and the words are listed in your order of service. Children, come up and join us for the story of all ages.
My name is Jessica, and this is my grandma, Marlene. And today is Justice Sunday, and so the adults are going to talk about human rights and global rights, and that's what the story is about. It's basically summing up the human rights, and they're kind of, human rights are kind of like rules that everyone thinks is fair and that everyone should live by. Yeah. Do you have a question? Oh, this is, okay, I'll get to the story. Okay, here's the story. This book is called We Are All Born Free. We are all born free and equal. We all have our own thoughts and ideas. We should all be treated in the same way. These rights belong to everyone, whatever our differences. We all have the right to life and to live in freedom and safety. Nobody has the right to make us a slave. We cannot make anyone else our slave. Nobody has the right to hurt us. Everyone has the right to be protected by the law. The law is the same for everyone. It is meant to treat us fairly. We can all ask for the law to help us when we are not treated fairly. Nobody has the right to put us in prison without good reason, to keep us there or send us away from our country. If we are put on trial, we should be put in public. The people who try us should not let anyone tell them what to do. Nobody should be blamed for doing something until it is proved. When people say we did a bad thing, we have the right to show that it is not true. Nobody should try to harm our good name. Nobody has the right to come into our home, open our letters, or bother us or our family without a good reason. We all have the right to go where we want in our country and to travel abroad as we wish. If we are frightened of being badly treated in our own country, we all have the right to go to another country to be safe. We all have the right to belong to a country. Every grown-up has the right to marry and have a family if they want to. Men and women have the same rights when they are married and when they are separated. Everyone has the right to own things or share them. Nobody should take things from us without a good reason. We all have the right to believe whatever we like, to have a religion, and to change it if we wish. We all have the right to make up our own minds, to think what we like, to say what we think, and to share our ideas with other people. We all have the right to meet our friends and to work together in peace to defend our rights. Nobody can make us join a group if we don't want to. We all have the right to take part in the government of our country. Every grown-up should be allowed to choose their own leaders. We all have the right to a home, enough money to live on, and medical help if we are ill. Music, art, craft, and sport are for everyone to enjoy. Every grown-up has the right to a job, to a fair wage for the work, and to join a trade union. We all have the right to relax and rest from work. We all have the right to a good life. Mothers and children and people who are old, unemployed, or disabled have the right to be cared for. We all have the right to education and to finish primary school, which should be free. We should be able to learn a career or make use of all our skills. Our parents have the right to choose how and what we learn. We should learn about the United Nations and about how to get on with other people and respect their rights. We all have the right to our own life and to enjoy the good things that science and learning bring. There must be proper order so we can all enjoy rights and freedoms in our own country and all over the world. We have a duty to other people, and we should protect their rights and freedoms. Nobody can take these rights away from us. Thank you for listening.
The hymn is listed in your order of service, 1008. Please stand as you are willing and able. Far from home here, there are women who are living, working, and raising their children in and around the biggest garbage dump in Central America, in Guatemala City.
These women, for the most part, are illiterate and abused by men in their lives. A school, Safe Passage, was started about 12 years ago to educate the children growing up in the garbage dump. And then in 2005, the school started an adult literacy program to teach their mothers how to read and write. They have also helped these women start a business creating and selling jewelry from magazines and cereal boxes, and some no longer need to work in the dump. I'm actually wearing some of the earrings that the women made, and there's some on display here. They're not making enough to actually sell in the United States at this time. My daughter May has spent the last 6 months volunteering at Safe Passage, teaching the children, the mothers, and she's just started a support group there for these women. In her own words, she says, "These women live in a violent and machismo society, and the majority have or are currently experiencing domestic violence at the hands of the men in their lives. I work together with a Guatemalan psychologist to use my experience working as a facilitator of a sexual assault support group in the States to create a domestic abuse support group for these women. The group is focused first on building self-esteem and later discussing topics around domestic abuse, such as needs and rights within a relationship, stereotypes about gender roles, power and control in relationships, setting boundaries, and assertiveness skills. Many of these women believe that it is normal and okay to be physically hit and are controlled by their male partners. It will be a process, of course, to begin to change these beliefs, as much of them are deeply culturally rooted. However, the program is designed to go slow and be a guide for the women to begin to think about themselves and their relationships in a new light, and most of all, to build self-esteem in order to create a foundation where change is possible. These women are some of the strongest women I've met and are embracing every opportunity they have for personal growth. I think the group will continue to help them in their paths towards empowerment. Thank you for your support. It means so much to me and most of all to these women." May's work at Safe Passage has already inspired other graduates here at LCUUC to pursue a service trip down there. Both Hillary Haskell and Rachel Fritz plan on spending many weeks there this summer helping out. So we'll now have today's offertory to both support the work of this church and the work that Safe Passage is doing. If you'd like to donate to Safe Passage particularly and want to write a check, please make it out to LCUUC and put Safe Passage on the memo line. All loose change today will go to Safe Passage. And any donations to our church specifically should go in the envelopes provided. Thank you very much. We're going to show a short video about the adult literacy program during the offertory.
I'm going to go ahead and read these captions. I don't think everybody can see them. So, this is about the garbage dump. The workers recycle paper, plastic, metal. The average daily wage is around 20 quetzales, under $3. Hanley Denning founded Safe Passage in 1999 to provide opportunities to the families of the dump through education. The Women's Literacy Program works with mothers who work in and around the dump. Many of the mothers have no previous education. They cannot read or write. Besides educating them to a sixth grade level, the project provides monthly food bags for the mothers. They are also taught how to make and sell jewelry, helping them to gain financial independence. Around 50 mothers attend classes at the project. In the past 2 years, 3 mothers have graduated the program. I have 3 kids, and I'm, like this, right? I'm 36 years old.
Niña
My kids are 13 and 12, and they're in the project. I work in the dump. I leave my house in Zone 6 at 6 in the morning to go to work in the dump. I go to work around 11 o'clock because I study here at the project in the morning. My dream is to be a nurse. After I get my 6th grade diploma, I'll study in high school. Right now, my job in the dump is to recycle plastic, nylon, aluminum, copper. One of the hardest experiences has been seeing our coworkers buried in the trash. For example, it's like right now, I'm standing with you guys, and a second later, you're not there. We found out later that you were in the dump. So we thanks to God. We never tire of giving thanks to God, for Mrs. Hanley was our angel, the angel of the garbage dump. We thank her for taking us out of the dump, maybe not for us, but for our children, because they were in the dump with us.
So the children will leave Ferrari now, and the high schoolers are going to stay in the service.
Now is the time for our joys and concerns. Today, we will light only 2 candles, the first holding in our hearts those suffering globally from disasters and conflict, the second for the joy, hope, and celebration of social justice throughout the world. After this brief affirmation, please join us for a few moments of silent meditation. I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. We will now start the sermon part of today's service with Mark Brewer first up.
We've all heard the number many, many times. 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust. I'd like you to think about the size and magnitude of the problem we're going to talk about today. So here's a few facts to kind of help you size things. More girls are killed in a gendercide in one decade. That's just 10 short years than all the people that were slaughtered in all the genocides of the 20th century. More girls were killed in the last 50 years precisely just because they were girls than men killed in all the battles of the 20th century. Approximately 3 million women are enslaved in the sex trade. It's a pretty conservative estimate, really. That does not include many others who are manipulated and coerced into the prostitution, nor does it include millions more who are under 18 and cannot meaningfully consent to working into a brothel. So as each of our speakers discussed three topics today, I'd like you to think again about how big this problem is, how little we hear about it. Now Tammy Wolfram is going to speak on the sex trade.
How is this going here?
Good?
Okay. Today, millions of girls and women are actually enslaved as prostitutes against their will. That does not include those people who have chosen prostitution because of economic necessity. In fact, it is almost certain that the modern global slave trade is larger in absolute terms than the Atlantic slave trade during the 18th and 19th centuries. According to the Lancet, a medical journal in the United Kingdom, 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year, and the total number of prostituted children could be as high as 10 million. 10 million children forced into prostitution. It's staggering to think about. An essential part of the brothel business is to break the spirit of girls through humiliation, rape, threats, and violence. Once a girl is broken and terrified, all hope of escaping crushed, she may appear to be there voluntarily, but complying with the will of the brothel owner does not signify consent. Mina was from a poor family on the Nepal border, and was only 8 or 9 when she was kidnapped and trafficked. Mina was kept in a hut with other prepubescent girls until she was mature enough to attract customers. And then at age 12, they brought in Mina's first customer. 12. Mina fought and resisted the man so much that the brothel owners had to give him his money back. Afterwards, they beat her severely with a belt, sticks, and iron rods. They showed her swords and said they would kill her. Each time they put her with a customer, she resisted, and each time they beat her. Finally, they got her drunk, and one of the brothel owners raped her. It was only when she felt she had been ruined that she gave in and stopped fighting customers. Mina and the other girls were never allowed out of the brothel and were never paid. They typically had 10 or more customers a day. If a girl fell asleep or complained of feeling ill, she was tied up and beaten, while the other girls were made to watch. Mina felt it would be better to die than to live as she was. Mina spent a total of 12 years in the brothel. She had 2 babies there, a daughter named Naya and a son named Vivek. But her children were taken away from her, and she rarely saw them. Mina eventually went to the police to try and get them to help her and her children get out of the brothel, but they just returned her to the brothel. Then Mina learned that because she had gone to the police, the brothel owners had decided to kill her. Fearing for her life, she escaped, but she had to leave her children behind. She desperately wanted to get her children out of the brothel and went back numerous times to try and get her children back, to no avail. Mina's daughter was Naina and was 12 years old when she was raped by a customer, and that began her life as a prostitute. When APNAAP Women Worldwide opened an office in Birbiskonge, Mina begged the founder to help her get her daughter back. APNAAP harangued the local police into raiding the brothel to rescue Naina. Once rescued from the brothel, Naina was treated at a hospital for severe injuries and a morphine addiction. The brothel owners had drugged her constantly to render her compliant. Apneop later built a boarding school, and both Vivek and Naina now study there. And Naina hopes to be a teacher for disabled students in the future. Sometimes rescuing girls is the easy part. Nick, one of the authors, bargained with the owners of Mom's Brothel and bought her outright for $203. When Nick first met her, Mom had been pimped out for about 5 years and seemed near to cracking from the strain. One minute she'd be laughing and telling jokes, and the next she would be sobbing. She begged to be purchased, freed, and taken back to her home. When she eventually arrived back in her village, Mom's family was overjoyed to see her. Plans were made for her to start working at the market in the stall next to her mother's. Mom said that she would never go back to Poipet. But a week later, she voluntarily went back to the brothel. At the brothel, she had been constantly given methamphetamines to make her compliant, and she was going through severe withdrawal. Twice more, American Assistance for Cambodia tried to help her leave the brothel, but each time she went back. Mom yearned to leave the brothel, but couldn't overcome her addiction. She later left the brothel only when it closed down due to increased crackdowns on sex trafficking. Mom eventually found a husband and is happy in her new life. Rescuing girls from brothels is important, but the best way to save them is to prevent them from being trafficked in the first place. We need to push for government crackdowns and dispatching border guards to stop traffickers. Crackdowns don't work perfectly, but they tend to lead nervous police to demand higher bribes. According to Gary Hogan of the International Justice Mission, you don't have to arrest everybody. You just have to get enough that it sends a ripple effect and changes calculations. That changes the pimp's behavior. You can drive traffickers of virgin village girls to fence stolen radios instead. Education is also important. For example, American Assistance for Cambodia in essence bribes families to keep their daughters in school. Poverty plays a large role in the problem, too, so helping to educate young girls and to give them a marketable skill will help to keep them out of brothels. We may not eliminate prostitution entirely, but if we all work at it through volunteering, writing letters, and making contributions, we can at least get rid of the jail-like brothels. You know,
violence against women. Half the Sky is a real tough read. The chapters on violence against women hit you hard with terrible facts and then stories that are tough to stomach. A few quotes. Surveys suggest that 1/3 of women worldwide face beatings in the home. 30 to 60% of women have experienced physical or sexual violence by a husband or a boyfriend. Rape is so common in South Africa that 21% of women have been raped by the age of 15. 1 in 5. Mass rapes have become commonplace in African wars. You've all heard about them, I'm sure. A UN report claims that 90% of females over the age of 3 were sexually abused in Liberia's civil war. In the Congo, rape is used as a tactic of war, being used to terrorize the civilian population and force their exodus. A United Nations commander states, it has probably become more dangerous to be a woman than to be a soldier in an African war. The authors of Half the Sky visited a refugee camp in the Congo to interview a rape victim. It wasn't too far into the interview, though, when they looked up to find a long line of women, each wanting their story of rape to be recorded. Heartbreaking for sure. Solutions. War and the rapes that go with it are certainly tough to stop. Local solutions, though, start in places like Heal Africa, a hospital in eastern Congo. It has served many of the rape victims and has made a large difference in the lives of the poor. About 1/3 of its budget comes from American donors. A young U.S. volunteer has assisted in that hospital, and she began a school for the children and later a program for skills training. Heal Africa even provides raw materials for women so that they can generate income for their family. Rape is used in portions of Africa to humiliate and control women. One shed is a young girl from a small village in Ethiopia. When she turned down the marriage proposal of a young man, he and his friends kidnapped and raped her. The idea behind such rapes is that the girl now has lost her virginity and has no choice but to marry the young man, because other men only want virgins. At the time, Ethiopian law stated that a man was not guilty of rape if he later married his victim. One short story is long, and I won't repeat it all here. She, along though with her father, resisted the pleas by the village elders and even the local courts to give in and marry the young man, as most of the other young girls do. She finally left the village, though, but it's courage like hers, I think, that starts the change of local values and traditions. Her dad had been in a larger town, and in the larger towns of Ethiopia, there's more progressive thought. Between the two of them, they decided to resist the local village traditions. It's not just the men, though, that use violence against women. A survey of Indian village women found 62% support wife beating. Zoya is a 20-year-old woman living in Afghanistan. She was married at the age of 12 to a 16-year-old boy. She was routinely beaten, supposedly for bad housework, by her husband, her husband's brother, her mother-in-law, and her sister-in-law. She once fought back, though, against her mother-in-law, and not the right thing to do. The beatings got more severe. She escaped the family, but even she agrees that the wife beating is acceptable. To quote, she says, "Well, if it happens that the wife is not taking care of her husband, or is she is not obedient, then the wife should be beaten." As the authors of Half the Sky state, this is not a tidy world of tyrannical men and victimized women, but a messier realm of oppressive social customs adhered to by men and women alike. New laws can help, but the greatest challenge is to change the ways of thinking. To restate, it's the social customs that are the greatest challenge to change. Education is often the key. Mukhtar Mai grew up in a village in Pakistan. She was gang raped at a young age, and rather than commit suicide, as many of the other young women who've been deeply humiliated, her shame turned to anger. She reported the rape to police, demanding prosecution. The case was widely reported by the international press, and the international press took up her cause. She realized, though, that the real important fight was against the attitudes that lead to acceptance of rape. She knew the fight required education of men and women. With money donated from across the world, she started a number of schools for girls, and later a number of schools for boys. At one commencement ceremony, the children performed skits warning about wife beating and warning about early marriage. She currently welcomes volunteers to teach English at her schools and provides free room and board. Her aid group is the Mukhtar Mai Women's Welfare Organization. The authors of Half the Sky express general skepticism about enacting laws to fight abuses, because the laws too often are not enforced. They do, however, support laws like the U.S. legislation that requires an annual report about human trafficking. They also support the law first introduced in 2007 to provide $175 million a year in foreign aid to fight domestic violence, mass rapes, bride burnings, acid attacks, and honor killings. The bill is titled the International Violence Against Women Act and is still introduced annually, but has yet to pass.
Hope you're doing okay. Our final category is maternal mortality, which claims the life of one woman every minute. This certainly is not our reality, as in some Eastern European countries, one woman dies in approximately 25,000 pregnancies of childbirth, but in the least developed countries that can be as high a ratio as 1 in 7. It's the equivalent of 5 jumbo jets worth of women dying in labor each day. Women are not dying of diseases we can't treat. They are dying because societies have yet to make the decision that their lives are worth saving, said the past president of International Federation of OBGYNs. As with the others, I think the stories are helpful, so I'd like to tell a few. First is Mahubuda from a small village in Ethiopia. Because of her parents' divorce, a neighbor was led to sell her for $10 to a man as a second wife. She was 13, he was 60. She was repeatedly raped and beaten bloody. Even the first wife joined in the beatings. At 7 months pregnant, she managed to escape and tried to run home, but finding no family members, she was determined to drown herself in a river. An uncle took pity and allowed her to live in a small hut near him, but having no money for a midwife, she tried to have the baby by herself. Unfortunately, her pelvis hadn't grown large enough for the baby's head, and she ended up with what we call an obstructed labor. This is a common occurrence among young teenagers and slender African women, which we've learned are evolved for running, not for giving childbirth. They need more cesareans and have less access to them. After 7 days of labor, Mahubuda fell unconscious and the baby rotted away in her, causing what we call a fistula. These fistulas are the leaking of human waste through a damaged uterus or vagina. Mahubuda had no control over her bladder or bowels. She couldn't walk or even stand, a consequence of nerve damage that is a frequent byproduct of fistula. These untreated fistulas emit a terrible odor because of the leaking of human waste. Whether they are caused by violent rape or childbirth, by girls who are too young, too small, too malnourished to bear children, these girls often find themselves with their lives effectively over. They are cursed, like Mahubuda, left out in a doorless hut for the wild animals to eat. At 14 years old and unable to move her legs, she shouted frantically and waved a stick at the hyenas all night long. She had heard of a Western missionary in a nearby village and was so determined to live that she dragged herself by her arms until she arrived half dead a day later. Aghast, the missionary rushed her to Addis Ababa Fistula Hospital, or as the staff calls it, Puddle City. Here, Mahubuda found she was not alone. There were scores of other girls and women just like her. The wounds from the urine eating away at their skin were frequently washed and cared for, and so were the fistulas and their self-esteem. Arriving in 1959 from Australia to work as OBGYNs, Catherine Hamlin and her late husband have presided over 25,000 fistulas, and they've trained countless of doctors to do the surgeries. The need is still great, as there are as many as 130,000 new fistulas in Africa alone each year. Most, like Mahubuda, are young and find their lives effectively over. Because of the shame and odor, they are shunned, divorced, and forced to live outside the village to starve to death, die of infection, or be eaten by wild animals. They are the modern leper. If this happened to men, would we have foundations and supplies from all over the world to come and help? Most fistulas are repairable, only cost $300, and 90% of them are effective. Unfortunately for Mahubuda, hers was more severe and she had to settle for a colostomy. But with therapy, she was able to walk, work around the hospital, and proved bright enough to become a senior nurse's aide, and today she is there with pride and self-esteem helping others. Catherine says that women are marginalized in developing world and are an expendable commodity. The author suggests that America could lead a global campaign to save mothers in childbirth. Right now, we spend less than 1/20 of 1% on maternal health care as we spend on our military. They ask, would the world stand by if it were men who were dying just for completing their reproductive functions? Of course, Oprah helped and put a new wing on Addis Ababa Hospital. But the issue is still getting minimal attention because they are female, poor, and rural. Remember, maternal mortality kills one each minute. The second story, Samish, also in Ethiopia, was 19, newly married, and excited for her first child. But she labored for 2 days and again had an obstructed labor. When she was barely conscious, she was carried to a bus, which took another 2 days. By then, the baby was dead, and she was left crippled and leaking of urine and feces. Because of her smell and leakage, the parents and husband saved as much money as they could to return her by bus, but the passengers on the bus ordered her off because she smelled so badly. She ended up, like most, huddled in her hut for 2 years. 90% of fistula patients have contemplated suicide, and Samisha was no different. She became catatonic and emaciated. After 2 years of being curled up in a fetal position, she couldn't move or straighten her legs. The family finally had saved enough to get her there by private taxi. Once they got her there, they had found that 7 centimeters of her pelvic had disappeared by infection. After a long and painful therapy, the staff and patients also helped with therapy. She eventually became strong enough to have her fistula repaired, her self-esteem returned, and she made a full recovery. The third story is about a charity called Women to Women International. An American of Jamaican ancestry and modest income decided to sponsor an African woman and follow her story. But what a story Claudine had. She is a 27-year-old genocide survivor from Rwanda. As a Tutsi, she was the only survivor in her family when the Hutu militia attacked. At 13, she and her sister were taken to the Hutu rape house and constantly raped and beaten. She said that their reproductive organs began to rot and maggots were coming out of their bodies. As defeat became near, the militia fled to the Congo and took her, she and her sister along. They eventually killed her sister, but perhaps let her go because she was pregnant. At 13, she trekked the country looking for help, but found none. She delivered the baby alone in a parking lot and struggled to keep the baby because it had a brutal father, but love prevailed and she kept it. Smelling from fistula, only an uncle would take her in, but demanded sex for shelter. She became pregnant again, and he kicked her out. Mervaline, who was sponsoring her for $27 a month, saved her life by giving her new hope. This hope goes towards training, modest savings, food, shelter, her children's education. They also get training on health, literacy, human rights, assertion, and how to become more accepting of injustices. And finally, I have to tell the story of Edna, who grew up in Somalia, where local camels have more freedom than the women. Her father became the head doctor of the country and opposed FGM, or female genital mutilation. Her mother, however, was steeped in this horrendous Somali tradition and had Edna caught and held down to have her genitals cut at the age of 8. The supposed intention is to reduce a girl's sexual desire, curb promiscuity, and ensure daughters will be marriageable. Edna grew up in a generation where there were no schools for girls, but she was lucky enough to hover over her brother's lessons and eventually became the first Somali girl to study in Britain. She also became the country's first qualified nurse midwife, the first Somali woman to drive, and eventually the country's first lady after she married the prime minister. After a divorce, she became a top official of WHO, the World Health Organization, but her goal was always to start a hospital. She used personal resources and U.S. donations and worked tirelessly to build her dream. The result is a 3-story hospital named Edna Adan Maternity Hospital. It has 60 beds, 76 staff. She lives in the apartment inside and uses her WHO pension to make up for the shortfalls. She gets donated supplies and has at least 2 of her own nurses going through medical school to become full-time physicians. They are working on an endowment for when she passes. At 3 a.m. one morning, a man arrives pushing his wife in a wheelbarrow as she was near delivery. Another time, a nomadic woman gave birth in the desert and developed a fistula. Because her husband couldn't stand the smell and constant wetness, he stabbed her in the throat. The knife went through her throat and tongue and stabbed at her palate. Other nomads saved her and together carried her to Edna's hospital, where a fistula surgeon patched the woman together from her throat to her bladder. This woman made a full recovery. Edna is a ferocious advocate for her patients and is daily on hand in the tough and satisfying work of reducing maternal mortality. There are others like it, but we can be a part.
You heard from Tammy about the sex trade. Think about this. The sex slave trade today is bigger than the transatlantic slave trade was in the 18th and 19th century. You've heard lots of powerful stories. The numbers are just astronomical. There we go. We heard from Phil on gender-based violence. women aged 15 to 44 are more likely to die or be maimed from violence than the combination of cancer, malaria, traffic accidents, and war. It's huge. We also heard from Terry on maternal mortality. I think she said this, but would the world stand by if this were happening to men just for exercising their reproductive functions? So as you think about the magnitude of this problem and the stories and the pain these women are going through, I urge you to take action in one of the ways that Terry's going to talk to us about next.
I think if nothing could be done to affect change, we might feel we were all better off not knowing about the problems that we just heard. However, the authors do lift us up with grassroots solutions that work. I encourage you to take the insert in your bulletin home with you. They list actions and solutions, and some of them do cost absolutely no money. Even if you set aside the humanitarian reasons to act, there are economic benefits to lifting up women and girls called the girl effect. It is shown that investment in the education of girls may be the highest return investment available in the developing world. However, a 2007 statistic noted that 66 million girls do not yet have access to education. We know that educating girls is proven effective in reducing each of the problems that we discussed today. We know that it is easier to torment the illiterate. We know that the educated have lower birth rates and get pregnant at an older age. We know that educating women and allowing them to earn money, getting money into the hands of women is beneficial, and that they tend to spend it on nutrition, medicine, and housing, where men in these third world countries tend to spend money on alcohol, tobacco, and prostitutes. There is an African proverb: to educate a boy is to educate an individual. To educate a girl is to educate a village. It is also true that terrorism is more likely where women are marginalized. As the Chinese proverb states, women hold up half the sky. Now please join us in singing the hymn, Our World is One World, in the hardback cover, book 134. For
a polylog if anyone would like to share thoughts, questions on the sermon. Please raise your hand, state your name. We have ushers with microphones.
This is Janica. Whoa, that was loud. Terry, thank you so much. This was a wonderful and terrifying program at the same time. Thank you.
Taken from all these guys, it's not easy to read this book or any book like it, but it's inspirational. And thank you guys for being able to get through it and being able to take from it and be able to make a sermon out of it. So good job.
One of the other things that we didn't touch on that just shocked me as I was reading through the book was the demographic data. Countries like China, I think a lot of us have heard of this before, that there's not enough girls in their population. And whether it's China or India, rural India, it's happening in a lot of third world countries where the boys are just more valued. It's not always just aborting or literally killing the young girl. Often it has to do more with the girls just not getting the same medical care. The boys get the medical care first. I forget the exact numbers, but it's huge. It was tens of millions of young girls are just gone. They're not there in the population like you would expect them.
It was basically, again, kind of the economic effect that one of the things that communism did was in fact to bring women equally into the workplace and so on. That's how I do remember it, something.
Well, just that it was a mouthful, that it was boring and it made the economy run. Yeah. It's not like poor half the sky, it's like great half
the sky. Right.
Hi there, Greg here. I was just wondering, you know, this is really powerful stuff, and they're, you know, making a big call to action, but what are the things a single person can do? What organizations are there that are, you know, widely known or are having a big influence? Because I know you talk about education, but what organizations should be a good one to donate to, or what do they need, or something like that?
To me, the personal takeaway for me is that education is you know, real critical. There's a lot of other organizations. There's that I listed in the bulletin. Some of them are person-to-person giving, meaning that you can provide microloans to women, help pay for a sewing machine so that they can have skills and earn a little bit of money. Some of the things that is becoming familiar with, some of the grassroots things on the ground, you know, starting these hospitals, providing aid. Some of the things in the book we're talking about, even allowing for women's girls' sanitation products would encourage them to go to school more if they have the privacy and the product so that they're not staying home, you know, just for menstruating. So some of them are very, very simple things. They don't have to be real costly. There's also in your bulletin just actions you can take supporting what Phil said, you know, the bill, you know, just becoming aware, letting congressmen know, letting people know that we support these actions.
Hi, good morning. My name is Tara, and I'm new to the church, and I'm delighted to be here. I just wanted to put forth that I personally know someone who has been a victim of human trafficking. So if anybody has any information legally or person is also looking for some safe housing or any information at all that would help if people could come and see me after church.
and I think that's an excellent point, the sexual trafficking happens in the U.S. I mean, there's a Somalia trade, there's been crackdowns in Seattle, St. Louis, Minneapolis. It happens in the U.S. Now, they're not usually American girls, but who do you think is utilizing the services of these women and seeking the services? They are indeed American.
I'm Tammy. You heard from me before. I just wanted to say that when I read Half the Sky, I honestly think it was the most significant book I have ever read in my lifetime. And I would really recommend that if you do nothing else, that you pick up the book and read it. I guarantee you will come away feeling so differently about what's going on in the world, and you'll be so driven to take some kind of action. And they also, in the book, in the back of the book, have quite a number of resources of things you can do. So if you don't do anything else, read the book.
I agree. It was the most significant book I'd ever read, and they also have a website that I think I listed in the bulletin that you can look for other actions and status and updates.
Hi, I'm Stacy, and I guess I just want to reiterate what was just said, but when I read the book, the stories are horrifying, but I thought the authors did a really great job of being inspirational as well. If you haven't read the book and the stories today have kind of scared you into not wanting to hear the horrifying stories, I didn't feel horrible at the end. I felt like empowered to do something, and I think it's important to know, someone else had asked, what can you do that... to send a girl to school in the third world country costs like $35 just to get him books and a uniform. It's not like the hundreds of thousands of dollars in tuition that it can cost to send a girl to, like, you know, private schools here. And just it doesn't take much. You can do a Kiva loan for as little as $25, and you can watch in the day that someone else around the world has contributed to the $1,000 that woman needs to get her business started. There's just so much you can do for so little effort, so...
And thanks for bringing that up, because I found the book uplifting myself. I mean, there's horrific stories, but the authors bring you back up all the time saying, yeah, but do something. Here's what you can do, very specifically. So.
Hi, I'm Emily. I already had quite a bit of background knowledge on this whole topic since I was in debate this year, and we learned a lot about this. And hearing all these things, it's just astonishing knowing all these facts and statistics. Because it's not unique just to the U.S. or South Africa. It goes on everywhere in the Middle East. It's very prominent in Asia, and it's just astonishing to know these facts. And, I mean, it even goes on within our military. Like how you were saying how it goes on in the U.S. It's our military even does it with our status of forces agreement in other countries. They allow it to happen, and their governments don't prevent it whatsoever. And a lot of countries don't even provide any medical care because they don't find it urgent whatsoever. And I just find it astonishing and so disturbing that our society today lets these things happen.
Thank you. Hi, Terry. One more thing that was in the book. A lot of you are asking, what can I do with my money? The book actually urged you to travel and see these countries and visit with these women. They thought that there was more value in that than actually donating money. So it's something I would encourage you to do. I asked my daughter, I said, would it be okay if I went and taught for the summer? And she's like, well. So.
But that is an excellent point. And I forget which country. It's one of the African countries where somebody was running a health clinic for women. And they said, rather than donate $1,000, use the $1,000 to come here. Because if you see it firsthand, there's no way you won't go home and do more than what that $1,000 was probably worth in talking to your friends and so on. So thank you all for bearing with us and for sharing. As Greg Mortensen, author of Three Cups of Tea, said after reading Half the Sky, it is brilliant and inspirational, and I want to shout it from the rooftops and the mountains. I think I felt the same way, so thank you all for who joined in. Final words, as we go forth, may the flame of our chalice rise within us. May the light of that flame shine through us. May the radiance of that light be freed by the justice we do, the compassion we love, and the walk that we walk with grace, humility, and joy. Amen.
Satisha Safa, 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 Sat